Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska!
Hello, I'm Dr. Ruth Westheimer. I hope you have a Merry Christmas. And the Jewish holidays are around the same time. A very good Hanukkah. And a Happy New Year.
The Bob Seska Show.
Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Ruth Westheimer in studio. Is she still alive? I don't know if she's even alive anymore. I'm going to have to look into that. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, December 7th. A day that will live in infamy. And this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, how you doing? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hello. Day 322 of the Biden-Harris administration, 336 days until the 22 midterms. I am on Instagram. My handle is the Bob Seska. I'm on Twitter, BobSeska_go, the suckiest handle on all of Twitter because there's a underscore in there. Oh, wait. Holy shit, he's back.
When you say Buzz Burbank.
It's Buzz.
Hi.
You said it all.
Hello, welcome back to the show. Welcome back.
Thank you. It is so good to be back with you, Bob, and our listeners. Thank you for your patience while I was away. It is indeed great to be back. And
it is.
And because I've been gone, I probably ought to set this straight. He's Bob, I'm Buzz, and we've decided to keep the show funded through February. So...
Patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. All right.
Yeah, and the news is crazy. So tell me if I get this wrong.
Okay.
I heard California Republican Devin Nunes is leaving Congress to become captain of the Titanic. Is that?
Perfection. Yeah.
The U.S. Supreme Court in the news, of course, trampling abortion rights and voting rights and at the same time protecting big business and guns. Global historians are now predicting that if the court moves any farther to the right, we're going to invade Poland.
Oh, man.
CNN has fired Chris Cuomo after hearing new allegations.
Yeah.
Now, if I understand how this works, this means Chris can now go into politics and Mario can get a job at CNN. Usually goes that way.
By the way, Chris Pratt playing Mario in the movie version of all of this. Just letting you know.
Yeah. Ironic.
Yeah.
Last week, we learned that Donald Trump tested positive for COVID-19 and didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
But according to his wife, Melania, it's not the first time he's brought home a disease. So
I can't even imagine. I can't imagine what's doing down there.
She's used to it.
Yeah.
Zoo animals. I read this. I was surprised. Zoo animals are getting the COVID now. At a zoo in Belgium, hippopotami, you know, hippos, are catching the virus. According to zookeepers, some of the hippos are refusing to wear a mask.
The anti-vaxxers among the hippos, my God.
Oh, yeah. You try to put one on them. And TV doctor Mehmet Oz, Dr. Oz, is running for a Senate seat in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And in response, Pennsylvania voters say they'd like a second opinion.
Yeah, me too. Rocky Mountain Mike. Yep.
Yeah.
She's Marjorie Green, she is the batshit one on the hill. Green, green, she's Marjorie Green, she is the mayor of crazy
day she was born. Don't you cry when my brain is gone. Now those cold hard facts, no, they won't settle her down. Can't you see she's QAnon? Everybody yep. now.
Green, green, it's Marjorie Green. She wants to get up in your grill. Green, green, it's Marjorie Green. She drank too much from her old still.
No, there ain't nobody in this whole wide world gonna tell her that she's out of place. Well, now she's on the lookout with her tinfoil hat for Jewish lasers from outer space. How about tequila?
Green, green, it's Marjorie Green. She's getting fat, shit, meaner still. Green, green, it's Marjorie Green. She is the mayor of Crazyville. She is the mayor of Crazyville.
Yeah.
She is the mayor.
How about tequila?
Rocky Mountain Mike, Rocky, MNTN Mike on Twitter. Holy shit, yeah.
It's too bad he doesn't throw himself completely into a project. You know what I mean?
I know, oh, no shit.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
And perfect timing because, as you know, Marjorie Three Toes now thinks cancer, just like COVID, just as contagious, right?
Oh, yeah.
Why aren't there lockdowns because of cancer, not understanding the thing about the contagious aspect of, oh God, why am I even bothering? I start down this road and I'm like, who gives a shit?
Yeah,
you know what?
Well,
yeah, she's just clanging pots and pans together. She's a rodeo clown is what she is. That's her entire job. She's not on any committee. She doesn't sponsor any legislation. All she does is go around saying, look at me. Look at me over here.
And yet it is terribly harmful because everybody in Q is willing to believe that.
That's right.
You know, that's the state of things, sadly. Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of the state of things, how the hell was your week? We missed you on the show, obviously. Missed talking to you. But once again, the things you go through for your family, and I say this in all sincerity, Herculean. Unbelievable, the undertaking that you achieved over this past week or so.
People do this every day, and you know, I actually lived in fear for years of my father's passing because I thought, well, I'm just not going to be able to handle it. I don't know what to do. I wouldn't know the first thing. I'm not going to handle this well.
Yeah.
And the truth is, what you find out, even if you believe that, is that you rise to the occasion, and people do it every day. And but I appreciate it because it does. You know, there is a certain amount of sacrifice involved in it, but you do what you need to do, what's right, and you find that if it's something you think you can't overcome, you rise to the occasion. And so, I don't think it was terribly special, but thank you anyway for acknowledging the effort.
Well, there's something that's almost instinctive that you undertake whenever something like this has happened. And I've seen it up close. It's remarkable what you do for your family. So I hope we can all see that as a positive example and take that along, pay it forward ourselves. So follow the Buzz Burbank example when it comes to dealing with family emergencies. It's really quite amazing. But one of the most amazing stories from your week, I got to hear about this motor vehicle mishap involving a nun. And it sounds like a great Buzz story. I got to hear this.
Well, about the other thing, people in my family and people in my circle of friends have said, "Oh, you're doing an amazing job. You're getting everything right. The medical, the legal, the financial, everything you're doing." And it was, you know, they're right. I was doing a pretty good job of it. I'm kind of an organized guy.
Yeah.
But that all fell apart the day before we flew to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
I got up and I was checking the reservations. I was going to check. It was time to check in, you know, online.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I saw Marcia's name, my wife's name there, but I didn't see mine.
Yeah, interesting.
And I don't know if I just assumed that I was flying and I didn't bother to make reservations for myself at any rate.
Sorry to interject, but when you look for your name on a list, do you sometimes accidentally look for Buzz instead of Mike?
No. This was a, you know, airline reservation through one of the websites. And I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And I realized, well, no, it's not them. It's me. I made reservations for Marcia. I didn't make any for myself.
Oh, no.
Can I get there at the time that I was hoping to?
Yeah.
And a very nice lady at Travelocity, got me, not only got me there at the same time as my wife, but on all four legs of the trip, of the round trip.
Wow.
And all the same places, seated together and everything. So that was kind of a miracle save. That was my Thanksgiving miracle. But then later that day, I realized I'd told the granddaughter, not my granddaughter, but, Phyllis's and my dad's, their granddaughter. I told her that she could expect a certain amount of money, from the estate.
Yeah.
And that same day that I realized I'd screwed up the airline reservations, I realized I'd told her she was getting twice as much money as she actually is.
Oh, no.
And bless her heart, it isn't important to her. You know, mm-hmm. She's glad they were well cared for. The fact that there's something left over is gravy.
Yeah.
And, she was not, she's just super cool about it. But between the airline ticket and that, I felt like Uncle Billy in It's a Wonderful Life.
And with the strings around your fingers and everything.
After all this praise about what a great job I'm doing, and then I just, tank everything the day before the flight. And we had a chance to catch up with friends in Wichita, yeah. And, people I went to high school with, and people from my earliest days of broadcasting, mm-hmm. and a very dear personal family friend, a nun. Neither my wife nor I are Catholic,
mm-hmm.
but I befriended the nun when I was working at Shakey's Pizza Parlor in the public house, and she would come in and drink everybody under the table.
There's Catholicism for you.
She's one of the rebellious nuns, so we love her for that. We love her for being activist.
Mm-hmm.
We've been friends for many years. Likewise, my wife, who had been married before, her first husband was into history, and this nun was his history teacher at a university.
Oh, my God.
And so when Marcia and I met, it was like, I know this nun. And I went, no, I know this nun. And it turned out to be the same nun. So we've been close friends for many, many years. And so we went to take her to lunch. And we're on our way back from lunch. And we're sitting at a red light, suddenly, bang, we're rear-ended.
Oh, my God.
Now, fortunately, there was no structure, no damage to the cars, and no one was hurt. Marcia and I felt it in our necks when that happened. But the nun did not, because she's very, very short. So she was well down in the seat and therefore did not experience the whiplash. So I have a short nun in the front seat, and we've just been rear-ended. And I'm thinking, do I make this friend of ours, this nun, sit through the police coming and all that? And, there was no damage, and I just waved everything off, and we went on our way. And as somebody remarked on Twitter, if you bring them back unharmed, you get your deposit back. So I thought that was encouraging. But that was the nun. That was my, oh, man.
Yeah. If you're going to be in an accident with a nun, make sure she's a teeny tiny nun. Then she's going to escape injury. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Too small to injure.
That's right.
But a wonderful time, nevertheless.
And also, is she 128 or something? I mean, how old is she?
quite old. Not quite that old. But,
okay.
But getting there fast. But just but sharp as a tack and sweet as ever. Yeah. And just a very, very dear friend. Our nun friend.
Well, okay. Lots to catch up on over the past few days. I guess we can start here. One of the big stories that we wrapped up the week with last week, and fortunately, it came down in time for us to talk about it on the after party, so we give it a little bit of a recap here. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump tested positive for COVID on Saturday, September 26th, 2020, the same day as the super spreader event in the former White House Rose Garden, now the Eastern European cement foliage cemetery installed by Melania Trump.
Yeah.
And that was the big event for Amy Coney Barrett. Apparently, Trump had tested positive that day, according to Mark Meadows' book. And then I have this theory, I think a lot of people also agree with me, that there was a subsequent negative test that was probably bogus. It was probably the negative test was probably the false test, if it happened at all.
Of course. Well, because shortly after that, he was in the hospital for it. So, say the positive test was accurate. The alleged negative test was not.
And so the following Tuesday, several days later, was the presidential debate with Joe Biden, where Donald Trump refused to have the screen up between he and Joe Biden. And it was a... you know, it was a risk to Joe Biden's life and health.
Nobody in the Trump entourage wore a mask. And right. To me, the most important event of these three is the one that took place between the two events you've mentioned.
Yeah.
And that was meeting with the Gold Star families. And then later blaming them for giving him COVID when, in fact, it was probably the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. If anyone tells you that the Republicans are the party of the troops or whatever, think about this. Yeah. Every time there's something goes horribly awry overseas in a war zone or something like that, they're always the first one to blame the generals. They're always the first ones to blame the guys and women on the front line. And that's the way it always goes. And this is another great example of that. Donald Trump blaming the troops, basically. In this case, Gold Star family of troops who were lost in battle.
And blaming them for giving him COVID when he, in fact, exposed them to it.
That's right. And I have this theory, Buzz, and this is where I get into crazy Bob tinfoil hat territory. I have this theory that Donald Trump wouldn't have minded it if he had given Joe Biden COVID at that debate.
You know what? You've nailed it with exactly the right words there. I've heard people say he deliberately tried to give it. And that's possible. I would assign the word negligently.
Yeah.
He didn't care, as you put it, whether he gave Joe Biden COVID.
That's right.
He certainly has reasons to favor it. It would underscore his theory that Biden is decrepit and weak.
Right.
It would give him an opportunity for a lot of more BS propaganda.
Oh, sure, sure. And so then 6 days after testing positive, Donald Trump is in the hospital. One of the latest bits of information that we've been hearing is that his blood oxygen was far lower, in far greater danger than
we're hearing more and
on. Yeah.
More and more we're hearing that he nearly died, that he came very, very close to death. And, you know, you'd think that would change a person, but clearly it did not. And, in fact, he doubled down, as he is wont to do.
And, you know, back when that, I forget the name of the doctor at Walter Reed, there was a team of doctors who helped the president, and they all gave a press conference out front of Walter Reed that day, or maybe it was the Saturday after. And we were all saying, as we were observing this press conference, oh, it's very clearly they're lying. I mean, we've seen precedent like this with Dr. Bornstein, who is Donald Trump's old personal physician who's now dead. Dr. Bornstein admitted that Donald Trump dictated that letter about Trump's health from a limousine outside the doctor's office.
Right.
So we know that. We know that Ronnie Jackson very clearly was lying about Donald Trump, not only about Donald Trump's vital health statistics like his weight, his height, etc., how long he's going to live, but the other thing that he was very obviously lying about is when Donald Trump, as far as I'm concerned, very clearly had a stroke while discussing the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, that whole speech, where Trump was slurring his words badly. We watched Donald Trump have some sort of brain event on live national television, and it was hardly a story. If it had been Joe Biden, oh my God. So then this leads us to the next layer of this story. Okay. How many people did Donald Trump come into contact with after testing positive and refusing to wear a mask between that point in time and being admitted to Walter Reed 6 days later? According to the Washington Post, 500 people between testing positive on 9/26 and going to Walter Reed less than a week later. Donald Trump gave 500 people. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not surprising.
And if you remember this old shampoo commercial, and they told two friends, and so you expose 500 people, potentially 500 people, to this virus, they all come in contact with a group of people. And those people come in contact with a different group of people, and that's how it spreads, and Trump just didn't care.
What I want to know, Buzz, is was there contact tracing of those 500 people? Did they look into, and I know this is, it's very difficult to prove that someone gave someone else this virus. They could have gotten it from anywhere, but there is somewhat sophisticated contact tracing that they can apply in these cases. I want to know, how many of those 500 people, or how many people those 500 people then subsequently came into contact with, who ended up on a ventilator or maybe even died? because of Donald Trump's irresponsibility, his brazen shirking of the rules, still going out doing rallies, flying on a Marine One and then Air Force One without a mask. We learned about that, too. Colossally irresponsible.
Yeah, 500 people exposed, and then all of the people they come in contact with.
Yes.
More than one person died because of that.
And that's the aspect of this that I think so many, certainly anti-vaxxers, anti-mask people, all of the various shirkers, tend to overlook. They tend to overlook the fact that even if they do get it and they go off and they do the Joe Rogan protocol or whatever the fuck, made up home remedy they come up with from QAnon or wherever they're getting this bullshit. Once they get that, who did they come into contact with? Who did they expose? They're never talking about that. I mean, you hear on Fox News Channel, Greg Gutfeld and some others going, yeah, this is the Omicron variant, perfect virus to get because it's not that severe. I mean, to me, right. And that's the subtext. But what they're not acknowledging is by going out and doing this, by exposing yourself, irrespective of whether you're symptomatic, asymptomatic, whether you end up on a ventilator or not, the period of time, that incubation period between being exposed, getting the virus in your body, however big that viral load might be, and then finally seeing some sort of verification that you have it, in that period of time, who did you infect? How many countless people are going to end up with this disease?
Well, even Mark Meadows had said, it's reportedly said, now I don't know if this has been confirmed, but Mark Meadows reportedly told staffers, keep your distance, treat him as if he has
COVID-19. Smart. Surprisingly smart of Mark Meadows. And remember the photo that we've seen of Mark Meadows during that press conference out front of Walter Reed, where he's sitting there on a bench with his head in his hands, as if to go, oh God, please let this burden pass over me, Lord. Yes. And we've seen that from other previous chiefs of staff as well in the Trump administration.
Overall, though, we're finding out how stupid Mark Meadows is. He was claiming at first, Bannon tried to claim executive privilege, and that didn't fly because Bannon wasn't working for Trump at the time of the insurrection. Mark Meadows, who was Trump's chief of staff, is claiming executive privilege, and that might have flown had he not written a book exposing conversations he had with the president.
Yeah.
He can no longer claim executive privilege for that because he's talking about it. Once you've opened that door, it's open season on him, which is why now Mark Meadows has again reversed his position and said he will not cooperate with the January 6th investigation.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's because Donald Trump is fired up about the biography. I wonder if that's, or not the biography, the new book, the new Mark Meadows book. I wonder if he's pissed off about that and really laid the pressure down at Mark Meadows. Like, okay, you're going to say this shit about me and testing positive for COVID, and you're going to go in and cooperate with the committee? No way. I'm going to fucking destroy you with my little statements from the 45th president. Sorry, Barack Obama, 45th president. He's going to completely smear Mark Meadows in the Red Hat Entertainment Complex. And that was probably the threat. Yeah.
And Trump's going to be even angrier when he realizes that by publishing that book, Meadows waived his executive privilege.
Yeah, exactly right. And now we hear from the Daily Beast that there are numerous reports confirming what nearly every politically savvy person saw coming. Former President Donald Trump does not think highly of Mark Meadows' new book and even feels betrayed by his former chief of staff. Notice the radio silence from Donald Trump about the positive COVID test. He hasn't said a goddamn thing about it because it's coming from Mark Meadows' book. It's coming from his own chief of staff, his right-hand man, the guy he relied on, the guy he mistakenly trusted to keep his secrets, right? And so now, what do you think Donald Trump's going to do? Say fake news? Oh, Mark Meadows is fake news. He's not going to say that.
Both men are evil. Both men are crooks with evil intent. But both men are also stupid. And Trump has made his own situation worse, as you pointed out he often does, by saying in a new interview that he fired James Comey as FBI director because he felt the Russia investigation would have removed him from office.
Well, that's another gigantic story. This is another great example of Trump always makes things worse for Trump.
Right.
Because the story at the time about Comey was, oh, this didn't have anything to do with me. This is the Attorney General going, I have no confidence in James Comey anymore. This is Jeff Sessions. Oh, you know what? Or who was it? Who wrote? Was it Rosenstein who wrote the letter? There was some sort of, I think Trump cajoled Rosenstein into writing a letter about Jim Comey.
Right.
Or
right. That's correct. You've got it right.
The reason for that letter was to deflect away from Donald Trump and the notion of obstruction of justice. Now Donald right. Trump has said, oh, yeah, I fired him. I fired Jim Comey, which very clearly is an admission. It's a confession.
It's more of a confession than what he gave Lester Holt, and that was considered a bombshell at the time when he said, I fired Comey because of the Russia investigation.
And so, I sincerely hope at this point that there is some sort of secretly impaneled grand jury looking at those obstruction of justice charges. And I know that Adam Schiff has been trying to apply some, shall we say, gentle pressure to Merrick Garland to make sure that this happens. And
Garland, I mean, as people have described it, is investigating all the foot soldiers and 650 Justice Department defendants at this point. And so it's not like he's doing nothing, but it's been noticed that he only seems to be going after the lower level folks, while the January 6th Commission is looking at Trump. You know, I guess the DOJ is looking at everything from the bottom up, as investigators often do.
Yeah.
The January 6th Commission is at this point in its work, I think, kind of investigating from the top down. Perhaps together they will meet in the middle and we'll have a complete investigation.
Yeah.
Perhaps the pressure from Nunes will get Garland to do more. Garland is very much aware of the pressure out there and I think is making an effort, but we all agree it's not enough and it's not fast enough. Democracy is at stake here. If I had any advice for the people who listen to this show, and it's something I've been doing more lately, and I would hope others would join in, talk to people, not just on social media, not just there, but in real life, talk to people about the fact that there is a very real threat to democracy.
Yeah.
And only one party cares about that. This is an important message for us to carry forward because, as I may have said before, I certainly said it privately, and that is that most Americans are unaware of the threat to democracy. They have their lives. A lot of them felt better when Biden got elected, that, well, everything's going to be like normal now. Well, it's not. Now, I don't know if you're going to talk about the Atlantic article that Rachel's been talking about.
The Bart Gellman article.
Gellman's article. I agree with everything in it except the part where he's certain that Trump is going to run in 24. I can't help but think. He says even investigations, even indictments will not hurt Trump. I don't agree. I really think between Trump's health, you alluded to the stroke, the fact that he has had COVID and there are long-term effects of that, he may not be fit enough and he may be too tied up with legal matters. There are still many lawsuits, civil lawsuits in the wings and in progress, as well as in multiple investigations. Do not forget about the investigation in Georgia at any point. There's no way, Trump may not be a free man to run for office. That's my feeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're in the same camp as Hal Sparks. I'm not as pro on that as you guys are. I still think that given the opportunity, he's going to run no matter what. This is his, as far as he's concerned, this is his manifest destiny to be a candidate again and to reclaim what was stolen from him. And this is a guy who's always felt entitled his entire life, always felt driven to always show strength and never show weakness.
Right.
I think he's going to be driven to run again. Whether he can or not, whether he's permitted to do that, is another story. Hal believes that he's in this for the Save America PAC money, for the cash. Yeah.
That's, I think, a big part of it. I think he would like to run. I think it may even be in his heart his intention to run. The question is, will he be able to? And I say no. I think there are two very strong odds against that, health and civil and criminal charges.
Well, it's a flip of the coin, and I think also it also behooves us to hope for the best and prepare for the worst. Acknowledge that there's a possibility that he is going to run, but that he may not. So, and that would be a best case scenario as far as I'm
concerned. But again, because so many people are not following what you and I and the people who listen to the show follow, they aren't aware of the threat to democracy. Please spread the word about the and you know, you have to frame it in a way you don't sound like a kook.
Yeah.
But you can very clearly lay out examples of why we're in trouble and that only one party seems to be resisting this move toward authoritarianism.
Here's the quote. Don't forget, I fired Comey. Had I not fired Comey, you might not be talking to me right now about a beautiful book of 4 years at the White House, and we'll see about the future. The future is going to be very interesting. So he's basically saying, had I not fired Jim Comey, I'd be in jail right now, and I wouldn't have been able to publish this picture book.
Right.
And that's exactly it. This is basically saying, it's not basically, it's admitting. Yes, it's admitting if I hadn't fired Comey, I'd be in prison. And that indicates very strongly obstruction of justice. I know, add this onto the stack. Allison Gill from Mueller, she wrote, believes that there is something happening at DOJ regarding an investigation into Trump. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it has to do with this. I think it has to do more with the election fraud and insurrection and everything like that than it has to do with his ongoing attempts to cheat, his ongoing attempts to obstruct justice, which are still things that need to be on the list as far as legal ramifications for this guy.
Yeah.
And let's hope that they are. Let's hope that that eventually happens because
we haven't. Yeah. We haven't broken the seal on that yet. You know, pressure's building up. I believe the seal will break and that there will be a flood of trouble for Trump and his supporters. But we're not. It hasn't cracked yet. It has to because of the immense pressure that's building up.
Well, and I also strongly recommend reading that Bart Gellman piece in The Atlantic if you can make it through the paywall, because many of us, including the aforementioned Hal Sparks, including Stephanie Miller, including me, including you, Buzz, we've been warning about this shit for years now. I mean, I've been warning about it going back to 2015 before he was elected in the first place.
You and Chez were worried about it.
Yeah. So on one hand, it's nice to see someone in a reputable publication like The Atlantic laying this all out. On the other hand, I feel like, well, just because it's in The Atlantic doesn't mean that it's brand new information. We've been talking about this for years. So, you know, in a way, I feel defensive insofar as, yes, we have talked about this and we deserve more credit for having talked about it.
The article is one man's perspective. It's, you know, his analysis of the situation.
Yeah.
Take that for what it is. Like I said, I agree. Well, basically what the article says is that there is a threat, a serious and dire threat to democracy, a very real threat that it could all end. The life as we've known it in this democracy could end in 2024. Yeah. And I think he's absolutely right about that. The only thing I would take issue with is take that Trump thing with a grain of salt. Yes, the assault is real. Whether or not Trump will actually be a candidate, maybe, maybe not. That isn't written in stone yet.
Well, there's some indications that the Republican Party is slowly backing away from him, but
I think they're preparing contingencies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could say that. I think contingency in the form of Ron DeSantis. That's going to be a fascinating.
Oh, my God. This guy with his private police force that is a paramilitary police force that answers only to him and making it the only law enforcement agency in the country that doesn't answer to the federal government. Well, what do you suppose he'll use that for? This guy must be stopped. And Ron DeSantis says a lot of idiotic things and does a lot of idiotic things, but he's very, very smart. And he knows exactly what he's doing.
Have you seen the videos of him miming Donald Trump's hand gestures while he's speaking publicly?
He's taken Trump and he's polished it. He's made it. He's got a smoother, more palatable way of presenting that, which makes him even more dangerous.
Yeah. Just the thing that we've been warning about, too. And I expect maybe Bart Gellman will write about this in a couple of weeks. The thing that we've also been saying, which is one of the real threats is the smarter, more savvy version of Donald Trump.
Exactly. And while it may not seem that Ron DeSantis is smarter and more savvy, he is a smarter and more savvy version of Donald Trump.
That is true.
That's a very real thing and a very real threat. And you look at this police force he's created, and you look at the ridiculous rules about the pandemic that he's created. That's what life in America is going to be like, and worse, if he were, forbid, elected president.
Oh, I know. Oh, God. Well, it's going to be, I got to break out the clown car music again.
Yes, please.
By this time, maybe next year or so. Like, can you believe people are going to start throwing their hat into the ring in like 13 months from now? Well, they kind of already have started. But as far as the really active process of running for president, we're talking about January of 23. I mean, that's just right around the goddamn corner. I can't believe we're in this again. Time moves by too damn quickly.
And yeah, tell me about it.
Back to the presidential level madness and the ongoing existential fear that we all experience as we watch perhaps democracy slipping away. The United States is starting to top the warning lists of failing democracies.
Yes.
And that's kind of terrifying.
Yeah, the world is losing confidence in the U.S., not because of Joe Biden, but because of the fact that we are teetering on the edge of losing democracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got a solution for you. If you're concerned about the future of the United States, the future of democracy, and you're really stressed out and you need some help, today's show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, like Donald Trump, for example? Well, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional therapy done securely online. You can log into your account anytime you want, send a message to your therapist. You're going to get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions.
Did you see the article in the last 24 hours that said America's blood pressure is up? Everybody.
Yes.
And it's because of this stress. This this sounds like promising for some people.
Yeah, I swear to God, I think my hair started to fall out because of the stress of the pandemic plus Trump and all the rest of it. Yeah, 100% serious about that. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change therapists if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and if you can't afford it, financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today, so visit their website, read their testimonials, BetterHelp.com/Seska. That's BetterHelp.com/CESCA. And join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional therapists in all 50 states. Here's your special offer for Bob Seska Show listeners. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Seska. That's BetterHelp.com/Seska. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
Dark and empty, not much in the sky. I'm just hanging up the phone. I just said goodbye. Drive to the party just to pretend. I'll stay with a face that shows there's nothing to mend.
This is my friend Seth Adam right here. Is one of his Christmas songs is called December 24, off of his album Steel Tempered Pride. God, Seth Adam's the best. SethAdam.bandcamp.com. If you want the full URL, you want to click on it, just go to BobSeska.com, find this episode of the podcast, and scroll on down. And got links to all of our indie bands here in the show, playing indie holiday music for the month of December. And as I said on the Indie Music Countdown on Monday this week, ding, ding, ding. I have a dinger. There we go. I'm going to be putting together a playlist of all of our indie Christmas songs.
Cool.
And what you can do is take that list and And play it during your holiday parties, or play it in the background while you're wrapping gifts or unwrapping gifts, as the case may be. Or you can play it in the car while you're out shopping and being safe, of course. So we're going to maybe put that either on the main feed for the show or even on our Patreon page at BobSeskaShow.com. So want to share all of these indie holiday songs one last time and put them all into a big block for you, because we're not doing an indie music countdown at the end of this month. We don't do one at the end of December. And so this will take that place. And plus, there'll be no talking. No talking, no commercials. We're just going to play all the music for you in just one big chunk.
Make a wonderful playlist. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
And I hope to bring you some of my favorite jokes of the year on that New Year's show.
Oh, great. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. I've been looking for things for us to do for the big New Year's Eve show, the big blowout that we do. It'll be the second annual one. We started it last year, doing it again this year.
Oh, my God. It was so much fun.
Yeah. I really got to hunker down. I got to hunker down, Buzz, and schedule this and get everyone lined up for the New Year's Eve show. I got to, you know what? You know, the first thing I got to do is recap what the hell it was we did last year, because I have no recollection of that.
Well, it would be fun to go back and listen to last year's. Yeah, we were, as I recall, very optimistic and feeling very cheerful.
Yeah,
because Joe Biden had been elected president and would soon be taking office. Little did we know what would happen a week later at the Capitol, Dome.
God, yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. So.
And because I've been out of town, my punishment is I will come back on Thursday. So I'm on again Thursday of this week.
Yes,
right?
That's right. Yeah, I forgot. Forgot to mention
now,
that.
Now, I'm envious. I'm glad Kimberly's going to be there. But last Thursday, you did a show with all babes. It was
my favorite kind of show.
You had Kimberly. I look forward to being with them at the New Year's show.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, that's the thing. This Thursday, we are minus both of the Goth Ninjas this Thursday. As we've said in the past, David has been preoccupied with his other job, and he's working to, you know, sort of work his way around that schedule so he can return to the Thursday show.
Yeah,
but I think he's going to be away again this Thursday as well.
It'll be okay, because I can be goth.
Okay, perfect. So we've got one goth boomer, and then we'll have a goth Gen Xer. Also sitting in. So two goth Gen Xers and one goth boomer. Thursday
That's
show.
Great.
So it'll be it'll be me, of course, and then you and Kimberly Johnson, I think, is coming back for the Thursday show, too.
I really enjoyed being on her show recently. It was great. Like I said, I couldn't understand why she had me on, but I thought it went really well. So.
I thought you were almost going to say, I couldn't understand what she was saying, but it was a great show.
Oh, no. We did very well. We did very well. I enjoyed that immensely.
Yeah. Well, like me and like you, Kimberly is endowed with the gift of gab. So it's a lot of fun to talk to Kimberly, okay, so digging back into things here. We lost Bob Dole, 98 years old.
Bob Dole.
A Republican from a different era. Yeah, you mentioned the Bob Dole thing with Norm Macdonald.
I can't think of a finer tribute to the man, because people who worked with him say he was just always funny. He was just always funny. And he did such a great job in that sketch with Norm Macdonald about Norm's impression of Bob Dole, and that stands to me as one of the greatest tributes to a man who led an amazing life.
Yeah.
I had the weird fortune, I guess, of spending a Sunday morning with Bob Dole.
Wow, how did that happen?
At a church in Wichita, Kansas.
Oh my God.
Bob Dole loved Wichita and was, you know, obviously a Kansas senator for many, many years. He was making what I believe was a campaign appearance at a church on Sunday morning. And after the service, Bob Dole and I were standing on the sidewalk outside the church and just chatting, you know, shooting the breeze, just small talk. And people started coming up to get his autograph. And I don't remember what Bob signed or agreed to sign. But people were also coming up to me, because I was from the radio, and they were coming up to me to get my autograph. So they would get Bob Dole's, they would get me, and some people asked me to sign their Bibles. And I just thought, no, you know, get me a program or something, whatever you call that thing. Get me one of those.
Get me a program.
Yeah, and I'll sign that. But I don't want to write in your Bible. That's you don't want that, you know. So
yeah.
But that was a strange experience. But yeah, we just it was a sunny, chilly morning, and we stood out on the sidewalk just shooting the breeze, me and Bob Dole.
That's incredible. and it calls to mind a joke: Buzz, Bob Dole, and a Catholic nun walk into a bar. The famous Norm Macdonald Bob Dole impression is the one that we all go to. But if you remember at the time, 1996, when Bob Dole ran for president, there was also a very short-lived sketch show on the ABC television network called The Dana Carvey Show.
Oh.
And I don't know if you watched that show, Buzz, but oh my God, Robert Smigel, who does the Triumph the Insult comic dog. And he's also
The ambiguously gay duo cartoonist.
Does all the SNL cartoons and so on with J.J. Settlemyer. And at the time on the Dana Carvey sketch show on ABC, which launched, by the way, with a sketch in which Dana Carvey as Bill Clinton nurses a handful of puppies on, they put like prosthetic teats on Dana Carvey's Bill Clinton impression, and he was nursing puppies on these teats.
Weird.
It was that was at 8:30 in the evening on the ABC television network, and it shocked the world. I think the show went away very soon after that.
Yeah.
But Robert Smigel also played Bob Dole on that show.
Oh, really?
And the extent of the impression was for him to just go, Dole. That's all he did. He didn't do any voices. He just said the name Dole like that over and over again. And I laughed. I remember laughing and laughing and laughing. But you know what? That was the time. Bob Dole represents a certain time, not only the greatest generation who understands what fascism is all about because they fought against it. Bob Dole was famously wounded fighting fascists. But also, Bob Dole was from a different era in politics, and it's coincidental, but the day before we learned that Bob Dole had died, I tweeted something along the lines of, you know, the stakes in our politics now aren't the way they used to be, where if someone like Bob Dole becomes president, it's not the end of the world. It's not, that's the way it used to be. It used to be that Republicans were, we disagree with them about the tax rate and, you know, there were things like
many things.
Yeah, there
were. But that was at the time we argued about policy, not insanity.
Republicans were merely wrong at that time. They weren't destructive to the very fabric of democracy, which is what they are now. And that's kind of what Bob Dole represented, a different kind of politics. And I remember that 96 campaign, as normal as can be. I mean, it was nice because there was really no threat of Bill Clinton losing that election. So you could kind of sit back and enjoy it from the political observational point of view.
It was, in fact, a simpler time.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. So anyway, getting back into the madness of our times, Devin Nunes is quitting Congress to spend more time kissing Trump's ass, apparently, because he's now going to be the head of Donald Trump's new media company.
Well, before we get too deeply into that, I this is funny because Devin Nunes, because Devin Nunes headed up one of the most powerful committees in Congress when he headed the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Yeah.
He's still a member of that powerful committee.
Mm-hmm.
And if Republicans win, he's due to become the head of Ways and Means, the Ways and Means Committee, which is perhaps the most powerful committee, and he would be in charge of it. And he's walking away from that to get on the Titanic.
It's just staggering. That was a great joke, by the way, because that's exactly what he's doing. It's just in time for the whole thing to crash and burn, because not only did they land $1 billion in venture capital from obvious stupid people who don't
including Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's put as much as $50,000 into it and already lost half of her money.
Oh, yeah. Just as a basic investor in the SPAC, DWAC, which I've been covering here on the show, enjoying how it's been declining precipitously since the day Marjorie Taylor Greene sunk upwards of $50,000 into it.
Right.
But as far as venture capital, $1 billion they raised to plug into this ridiculous company that's inevitably going to go, by the way, way of Trump vodka, Trump steaks, and all the rest of it.
Sure.
I mean, this is a disaster in the works. Plus, on top of all of that, Trump's SPAC is now under investigation.
And this is another example of why I don't think Trump will be running.
Yeah.
He'd like to run. He's raising the money, which he knows he's going to keep regardless. But I think it's things like this that are piling up. And soon the floodgates, I believe, will open because of the pressure. It's going to make it very difficult, if not impossible, for him to run.
Wait, I'm going to sneeze. I'm going to sneeze in a second.
Oh.
Not happening. Crawl back up. Okay, never mind.
I used to have a trick for that when I was like doing the news on the air, on the radio.
Yeah.
And I would feel a sneeze coming on. I would apply pressure from the flat of my index finger on my cheek right next to my nose. So it basically shuts off the sinus.
Yeah.
And it allows you, and it doesn't make you sound like this, and you're able to get through it. So
yeah.
If you ever need feel the need, just press. I'll send you a picture of how to do it.
On the upside, I always cover my mouth. The fat laughing guy behind me doesn't wear a mask. So
of all the bodily noises that can be made on the air, sneezing is my favorite.
Yeah. Well, no, my favorite is this.
Yeah, I know.
There you go.
I know. Yeah. I'll stick with the sneeze.
But yeah, they're under investigation for reasons that are very difficult to explain. The SEC has voiced concerns about SPACs in general. That's the kind of merger. That's the kind of corporation DWAC actually is. And Donald Trump's company has merged with that in order for it to go public on NASDAQ. But the SEC hasn't been very active in policing them. A financier behind Digital World could also face scrutiny from the SEC. Now, you know, these investigations by the SEC are usually lopsided. Usually the SEC is way outspent by whoever they're investigating.
Yes. Right.
And as we've learned through the miniseries Dope Sick, not specific to the SEC, but sometimes these smaller agencies can be corrupted somehow, like we've heard from about the FDA when it came to OxyContin. And so with this, I'll believe it when I see it, when I actually hear that they're making some headway with this investigation, that's when I'll believe it. But suffice to say, this is not a good climate for Devin Nunes to be climbing aboard, right? It's the worst possible time. I don't know what they're thinking.
It's inexplicable. I mean, does Nunes not realize that Trump will abandon him at some point?
That
Trump will blame him for the failure of this?
Yeah.
Does Nunes not realize this is the end of his career?
Mm-hmm.
Is it that important to him to get close to Donald Trump or think he is?
Yeah, yeah. He should familiarize himself with the word scapegoat, because that's what happens to everyone who surrounds Donald Trump. If this thing fails, Donald Trump will go, oh, it's Nunes' fault. It wasn't me, it was Devin, and I fired him and brought in Eric to take over, or whatever the story ends up being. Devin Nunes is like a bullet blocker for Donald Trump.
I'm not sure we have the answer yet to why he's leaving such powerful and influential positions in Congress, in Washington, to run a company that, by the numbers, is destined to fail.
Well, in all honesty, it's the cynical cash grab. This is what this is. I bet he's getting a huge
short-lived,
sort of golden parachute. Yeah, I bet there's. But all of that is probably built in. There's probably a big, you know, whether it's vesting over time or whether it's just a big cash payout, doesn't matter. I think Devin Nunes knows that he's going to pick up a big hunk of cash for participating in this. Win or lose, you know, succeed or fail, this thing is going to be, you know, a bonanza, a cash bonanza for everyone involved.
Briefly, temporary.
Yes,
time.
Exactly right. Temporary.
You know, the greed you see in the world, a lot of it, whether it's corporate greed or political greed, they're always looking at the short term. I've worked for people who said, I only care about this quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not looking at the long term because they don't care about the long term. They just want to make some cash in this quarter and, of course, the next quarter. But they don't look down the road. And this is that sort of short-term greed, which is the worst of all the kinds of greed.
On that note, how do I segue from greed to talking about my Patreon page? How appropriate. If you're only listening to this show, if you're only listening to the free portion of the Bob Seska Show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, you're only hearing the first hour. There's an additional 20 minutes. Like, if you imagine the whole show, you're only hearing the first two-thirds. You're missing the final third, the final act of the show. It's the most pivotal part of the show. And it's about 20 minutes long. It runs after the end credits roll at the end of every Tuesday and Thursday show. All happening over there on our Patreon page. Of course, I'm talking about the Shadow Docket podcast at patreon.com/Bob Seska Show or just BobSeskaShow.com. Easy to remember. It's a completely unfiltered, commercial-free continuation of all the fun and news, and it's only going to cost you pennies per episode. The Shadow Docket drops every Tuesday and Thursday after the free shows, and it's only going to cost you $5 per month, and you're going to be supporting this fully independent podcast. Don't miss out. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com. Bookmark it. Send it to all your friends, and we thank you in advance. Whoops.
I'll leave it.
I pressed the wrong button. Here we go.
Bob Seska.
Rebecca Dreskin from Blame It on Rebecca and her brand new Christmas song is called 2,000 Miles. Yeah. I love it. Interesting, quirky, and very, very catchy. Blame It on Rebecca.bandcamp.com. Yeah.
A unique take on a favorite song of mine for the holidays.
Oh, hey, I didn't know that. I didn't know you were into this one. I'm not as familiar
with this song.
I'm not as familiar with 2,000 Miles as some of the other Christmas fare. So, yeah, man. I was always glad to hear it. Yeah, as I said, Blame It on Rebecca. Two K's in Rebecca. Blame It on Rebecca.bandcamp.com. Link in the description under this episode at BobSeska.com. All right, moving on here. Joe Biden is the jobs president. We got to make sure we emphasize this because this is a big fucking deal. Mm-hmm. All right, so far. In the first 10 months of Joe Biden's presidency, 5.8 million jobs have been created. We're on target to have 7 million new jobs by the end of Biden's first year, by January 20. Yeah, unprecedented. And here's how unprecedented it is. Donald Trump's first 10 months of his presidency, 1.7 million new jobs. George W. Bush lost 1.5 million jobs in his first year. Obviously, 9/11 was in there, but certainly Donald Trump, I mean, mix those two guys up. George W. Bush's policies also exacerbated that. And then his dad, George H.W. Bush, 1.5 million new jobs in his first 10 months. Ronald Reagan coming up last in this list. At 138,000 new jobs in his first 10 months. That gets one of these. Yeah. St. Reagan only came up with 138,000 new jobs in his first 10 months.
So Biden's doing a great job with the economy. And the economy is a very complicated and multi-layered.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, inflation prices are coming down. The supply chain problems are being solved.
Of course.
And you have this amazing record sort of unemployment. Mm-hmm. Economists were not expecting a 4.2% unemployment rate for another 4 years.
Wow.
Biden brought it in 4 years ahead of schedule. Again, amazing. And so what's the problem? Why aren't more people pro-Biden when we have this kind of number? Here, and Ari Melber retweeted this, two headlines from the Associated Press. One is February 2nd, 2018. Mm-hmm. The other is December 3rd of this year. The one from 2018 reads, U.S. employers added a robust 200,000 jobs in January. When Trump was president, AP was reporting in its headline that Trump had added a robust 200,000 jobs. This month, AP reports, and almost the same wording, almost, with one key difference.
Hmm.
The recent headline was, U.S. employers added a sluggish 210,000 jobs in
Jesus
November.
God.
So under Trump, it was robust, and under Biden, it was sluggish, and he had 10,000 more jobs?
Yeah.
This is our problem, and getting out the word and convincing people the reality that's out there isn't reality, as is so often the case these days. People need to know that very real things are happening, including this record employment.
Yeah.
And the amazing economy overall, the prosperous prosperity of it.
Yeah, and Donald Trump knew, the Republican Party at large knew, that there was this disparity in the press. In fact, the Republican Party has created a large part of this disparity by slamming the press with this liberal media bias thing for the last 50 plus years. At least since 1964, it's been all about the liberal media bias in the press. The press is so sketched out about that that they've overcompensated as a consequence.
And it isn't just that, too. You know, when I heard this theory by itself, I wasn't sure I agreed with it. But when I combine it with this overcompensation for the accusation that the media is left biased, it's not just that overcompensation. It's also the media made more money with Trump.
Yeah, yeah.
I know my listeners, when I was doing, I used to do news. I don't know if you know that, but my listener numbers were up. I think yours were up. They were up at all the networks. So you remember, I think it was Les Moonves at CBS who said, Donald Trump has been very good. It may not be good for the country, but he's been very good for CBS.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a combination of overcompensating for the accusations of left bias and also greed.
Yeah. Now, imagine this. I'm going to put this into metaphorical terms. Imagine two boxes. One box is the Donald Trump box. The next box over is the Joe Biden box. The press has these boxes to fill, let's say, over the course of a normal news cycle. Donald Trump fills it with batshit crazy, highly abnormal things from, you know, just random statements all the way through. Out of a fire hose. Exactly right. Mm-hmm. All the way through things like cheating twice in the same election and being impeached twice. Things like Charlottesville, the insurrection, all the stuff that we were talking about with regard to testing positive for COVID. That fills the one box. Joe Biden fills the box with things like normal things like, right, a little bit of inflation here, that the globe, the entire world happens to be experiencing, you know, some supply chain thing, a predictably messy withdrawal from Afghanistan, irrespective of who might have been president. I mean, we're talking about normal things. Mm-hmm. The boxes become equally filled by the press, right? They've got to fill column inches. The one box is filled with destructive, anti-democratic things, and the other box is filled with normal things, and it's the same size, the same number of things. That's the way the press is thinking about these things. And so, therefore, Donald Trump and the people who surround Donald Trump, the modern Republican Party, the Red Hat Republican Party, can get away with all of this crazy shit because it receives the same amount of coverage as the normal stuff. Am I making sense on this?
Yeah. The press wants to make it appear that they're being as hard on Biden as they were on Trump. The truth is, they're being harder on Biden than they were on Trump. That's why I say they're overcompensating.
The terrible aspect, obviously, is that Joe Biden gets a bum rap from the press because of this. But it's also advantageous to Donald Trump because it's the Steve Bannon philosophy of flooding the zone, right? Flooding the zone, it makes it impossible for the press to properly categorize that, because the press instinct is to say, well, it's equivalent, you know, it's about the same on, you know, we said all these terrible things about Donald Trump, so in order to be fair and balanced, we have to say equally awful things about Joe Biden, except the equally awful things that we say about Joe Biden happen to be over things that are perfectly normal for any fucking president.
Well, I'm trying to avoid, and I would encourage other people to avoid criticizing the Democratic Party, but if we have a weakness, and we do, it is not spreading the word, not flooding the zone. Mm-hmm. I remember working in Chicago. I worked for a radio station that was owned by CBS, and our big competition over at WLS was owned by ABC. What I noticed is ABC put a lot of money into promotion.
Yeah.
And a lot of money into very fancy, very expensive advertising. But, you know, most of the product, their various stations that they owned there, and most of the shows on those stations were weak. They really weren't that good. You know, a lot of the big names from LS were gone by then. And so it was just kind of, you know, motoring along. But they had this tremendous promotion machine. Over at CBS, we had, I think, much better programming that we were offering on our stations. Much better, but no advertising to speak of. Very little. Of it. When we did it, it was kind of lame. Mm-hmm. And so this is the Republicans versus the Democrats. It's the same thing. Their marketing is so much better than ours. They're so much better at flooding the zone than we are. We have got to step that up.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm encouraged by the fact that Jamie Harrison, who's the chairman of the DNC, is beginning to make the rounds on the podcasts. And one of the reasons he's doing that is because of Kimberly Johnson. Kimberly Johnson tweeted to him last week and said, hey, there are all these liberal podcasts. Why don't you avail yourself of, and the DNC, of these podcasts? Get the message out. Yeah. And of course, he responded with like a 12-part reply.
Wow.
Enumerating all the things that the DNC is doing. And not only that, but he's booked himself on Kimberly's show.
Oh, Jenny that's Harrison. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Kimberly A. Johnson getting it done.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he's also booked on tomorrow's Stephanie Miller show. Excellent. So he's going to be on Kimberly's show. He's going to be on Stephanie's show tomorrow. In fact, I've been bumped to the second hour of the Stephanie Miller show to make way for Jamie Harrison tomorrow morning in my slot. And I'm happy to relinquish that slot to the chairman of the DNC to talk about messaging here. Yeah, and yeah. One of the first things that I've been saying right out of the chute is Democrats deliver. Anyone who, I'm not sure who came up with that slogan or that hashtag, but Democrats deliver. If you're interested in spreading the word, that hashtag is the way to go. Joe Biden is the jobs president. Mention that anytime you get a chance, because that's fucking real. I mean, the number of jobs that are been created, not only as a result of the economic recovery, but also as a result of the American Rescue Plan that was passed last spring by Biden and the Democrats. So this is all positive news. These are all things that we can all take a greater hand in helping to spread around. You know, it's the old philosophy that, you know, you can have the greatest message in the world, but if no one spreads it, doesn't make a sound. And so that's also our responsibility. It's not just about the DNC coming up with a great message or third party groups coming up with great messages and getting the word out through videos or hashtags or whatever, social media. It's also about us sharing those links. And it's so important to do that.
Share the fact that insulin users, diabetics who use insulin, instead of spending $1,000 a month or more, we'll be spending $35 a month, thanks to Biden's Build Back Better.
That's right.
And as Bob said, tag that with Democrats Deliver. We need to get that message out. We need to continue to get out the message that right now only one party stands for democracy, period. The other is clearly demonstrated they're against it. And use evidence in your argument. So present a fact, a simple, absorbable fact, and tag it, Democrats Deliver, and use that to keep spreading the word. We need to get more of that out there.
That's right. And by the way, 30 million Americans are now the recipients of guaranteed minimum income. This is really happening. This is the child tax credit, or as I like to call it, the child tax cut. And those are guaranteed payments every month, and through the Build Back Better Act, they will be those payments will be extended at least by another year. That was the latest number that I saw. It could be beyond that, but that's, you know, that's another consequence of Joe Biden and the Democrats. And all good
that's
news.
That's why I'm declaring you this year on my income taxes as a child.
Perfect. I'm happy to contribute in some way. Okay. In meantime, this is not good. U.S. hospitalizations are about to hit, I think they came close yesterday. 60,000 people hospitalized in the second Delta wave. And
that's what it is. That's just Delta. That's not the Omicron virus.
That's right. And of that 60,000, about 14,000 are Americans in ICUs. So anyone who's telling you that the pandemic is over, they are lying to you. And that includes Bill Maher as well.
Yeah. So now we have to change the name of our band. We can't call ourselves Omicron anymore.
Well, I'm glad that you're at least saying Omicron. Because I'm hearing all kinds of variations of that one.
There are about 22 different pronunciations of it, and they're all correct, according to what I've read. So call it whatever you want.
17 states right now, as of December 1st, when the first case was reported in California. New York City, meanwhile, announced a coronavirus vaccine mandate for all private employers to combat the spread of Omicron. De Blasio called the mandate a preemptive strike. Hey, that's the way to do it. You got to hit it before it reaches its peak. Once it's at its peak, it's much more difficult to defeat. You hit it when it's low, when it's weak.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out or how successful that is. I hope it is.
Absolutely. So lots more to come still on the Shadow Docket podcast on our Patreon page. Again, it's Act 3 of the show. And if you miss Act 3 of the show, you miss a lot.
Yeah, we're warmed up now.
Exactly. Hey, so make sure to sign up on our Patreon page, patreon.com/Bob Seska Show, or very simply BobSeskaShow.com. And we thank you for your support. It's $5 a month. It's a bargain at twice the price. We pass the savings on to you. So run, don't walk over to our Patreon page and plug in your information and you'll be all set. You'll be clued in. You'll be wired into the heartbeat of the show. All right, folks, Shadow Docket's next. See you over there, folks. Bye-bye.
Great to be back.